This is Ron Stockton. I want to tell you about Ariel Sharon, General, Prime Minister, gentleman farmer in the Negev, thanks to the generosity of a rich ally from Chicago who bought him a farm. Sharon died on January 4th, 2006. He was declared dead January 11th, 2014. He spent 8 years in a vegetative state. Sharon is considered by many Israelis, especially those on the right of the political spectrum, to be one of their great leaders. Not everyone would agree with that assessment. The Lebanese call him the Butcher of Beirut. Palestinians would have an even harsher assessment. When Menachem Begin, under whom Sharon organized the Lebanon War of 1982, was an elderly, reclusive ex-prime minister, an aide asked if he had any contact with Sharon. He went cold as ice and said, "I never want to hear that man's name again." Azer Weizmann, a top military commander and president of Israel, once said that in combat he would follow Sharon into hell, but politically he would not follow him across the street. Here are some significant points in Sharon's life. As Israeli Minister of Agriculture, i.e. Chief of West Bank Colonization, in the 1980s, he expanded the structure of Jewish settlements in the Palestinian lands and set the stage for Israel's ultimate destabilization. He told settlers that it was necessary to grab every hilltop, even without government approval. Everything they did not grab would be taken away in negotiations. This land grab is a quicksand trap that will engulf Israel in the end. To fill the West Bank, Sharon said Israel should have 10 million Jews within a decade. Do the math and see the reality. There are 14 million Jews in the world, under 5 million in Israel itself at that time. This meant that 5 million more would have to come from overseas. Nearly 6 million were in the U.S., 3 million lived elsewhere. If all the Jews in the world outside of the U.S. went to Israel, they would still need over 1 million American Jews to fulfill their destiny to be a Jewish state. Given that few people over the age of 40 ever leave their homeland, and given that the Jewish population in the U.S. is aging, the departure of 1 million Jews would mean that almost all of the fertile Jews in the U.S. would have to go to Israel if the Jewish state were to fulfill its destiny. This would produce a demographic collapse of Jewish America. Within a few decades, the U.S. would have only a minuscule Jewish population. That was Sharon's vision. Just before his stroke in 2004, Sharon repeated the appeal. He told Jewish leaders in the U.S. that Israel needed 1 million Jews, fast. The same year, he said the French Jews should get out while there was still time. The French Jews were not pleased. The American Jews stayed put. In a country that puts the Holocaust at the center of its identity, Sharon did not mention that historic event even once in his autobiography, which is called Warrior. He was a proud Israeli. What happened in Europe was Europe, not Israel. You have to admire that. In discussing the 1973 war in that memoir, Sharon insisted that the massive U.S. emergency airlift of arms to Israel played no role in the outcome. He really didn't like us very much. As a young officer, Sharon headed Unit 101, a retaliation unit within the Israeli military. In 1953, his unit massacred 69 civilians at Kibya, an Israeli town. They issued a curfew in midday while people were in the fields working. As they came home, they were killed, men, women, children. Sharon was investigated in a semi-court-martial and acquitted. When Israel invaded Lebanon in 1982, there were the Sabra and Shatila massacres, in which 800 to 1,500 unarmed Palestinian civilians were killed in the refugee camps. The numbers may be higher, actually. This was after the Palestinian military units had been evacuated to Tunis under an international agreement brokered by the U.S. President Reagan had promised to guarantee the security of Palestinians left behind. The Israelis controlled access to those camps and allowed an extremist anti-Palestinian Lebanese militia to enter the camps to conduct the massacre. The Jerusalem Post described how rabbis leading Rosh Hashanah prayers as the sun went down could hear the screams and gunshots. They said it would be known as the, in Jewish history as the Rosh Hashanah of shame. Israel's Kahan Commission investigated these massacres and, in an act of political courage, found that Sharon was personally responsible, quote unquote, for what happened. His allies in the U.S. have grabbed onto another phrase in the report about indirect responsibility, meaning that Sharon and other top Israeli commanders had not given specific orders for the massacres. But the report was unequivocal. It recommended that he be removed from political office. He was Minister of Defense at the time. When Sharon went before the Knesset to defend himself, his bellowed rage turned into an anti-American harangue. He said the Kahan Commission was an American-instigated plot to crush Israel and force it out of the West Bank and East Jerusalem. The opposition Labor Party of Rabin and Peres was part of this conspiracy. After these massacres, the U.S. got drawn into the Lebanese war in a direct military sense. We lost 249 Marines one terrible Sunday morning and left in defeat. It was a bad time all around. In 1998, during the Oslo-linked negotiations at Y, Israeli and Palestinians agreed, Israeli and Palestinians signed an agreement to have Israel fulfill its unfulfilled previous commitments to withdraw from major Palestinian cities, especially Hebron. Sharon refused to shake hands with Arafat. Y could have ended the fighting and facilitated future negotiations. His message was loud and clear. Sharon was known in Israel as the bulldozer. This was an allusion to his support for more settlements, but also a comment on his political style. When the first Intifada started in 1988, he said that there was a finite number of Palestinian leaders. If we target and assassinate them, there will be peace. Israeli observers always said that Sharon had a strategy. If violence does not work, more violence will. Sharon was a central factor in precipitating the two intifadas. These were Palestinian uprisings in Gaza and the West Bank. The first intifada started in 1988, and the Al-Aqsa intifada started in 2000. Both involved the security of Islam. In 1988, Sharon had purchased an apartment in the Ecce Homo Arch in the Via Doloroso, the Street of Suffering, where the Stations of the Cross commemorating the crucifixion were located. This street runs through the Muslim quarter of the old city. Under the centuries-old status quo agreement, the Muslim authorities recognized the significance of these sites to Christians and had for ages allowed various organizations, mostly Catholic, to control those sites and have their churches and orders there. One of the most dramatic of those stations was the Ecce Homo Arch, which stretches over the Via Doloroso. The words mean, "Behold the man." This was the presumed site where Jesus was condemned to death by Pilate. Sharon had taken over the apartment in that arch for his personal use. This was in violation of local laws, by the way, and had hung a large Israeli flag over the street where Christian pilgrims and Muslim neighbors would see it waving. I walked by there once and saw it hanging like a giant middle finger. It certainly sent a message that Muslims were not safe, or Palestinian Christians for that matter. The first intifada followed quickly. Sharon's second contribution to a Jewish-Islamic war was to walk into the Al-Aqsa Mosque compound with 1,000 Israeli soldiers on September 28, 2000. Since the day in 1967 when the Israelis captured East Jerusalem and the Old City, not a single Israeli leader had entered that sacred area. Over and over, Israel had reassured Muslim authorities that Islam and its holy sites were safe. The Israelis knew exactly what would happen if they violated that pledge, and they were right. Sharon marched in with his 1,000-man security guard with helicopters flying overhead and proclaimed that this will be Jewish forever. Of course, he then did what leaders in that area so often do. He switched to English and said for the cameras, "We want peace." But the next day, the explosion occurred. By the time the situation settled down, several years later, there were over 4,000 people dead, 3,000 Palestinians, and 1,000 Israelis. Sharon's allies in the United States have insisted that the Al-Aqsa Intifada began on September 27th, the day before his visit, thus exonerating their hero. But no serious analyst exonerates him. When Sharon made his political comeback and became prime minister in 2001, his two sons told him that he had to change his image. He had to become the kindly grandfather, just looking after the family. He stuck to this as much as he could, but sometimes he slipped. I saw him once on CNN when a reporter asked him about the Palestinians. The old Sharon appeared, and he snapped out, "There is no such thing as a Palestinian people. They are Arabs." But then he switched back and said, "We want peace." Sharon's admirers credit him for withdrawing unilaterally from Gaza in 2005. But he did not withdraw. He pulled out a few thousand Jewish settlers, but kept Gaza under his thumb. Israel still controls the water, the electricity, the tax collection, the coast, entrance and exit for both people and goods. He also cut off all physical contact between Gaza and the West Bank. As his chief advisor said, the withdrawal would put the idea of a Palestinian state into formaldehyde. Sharon's two sons did his dirty work for him. In December 2005, one of his sons was indicted for corruption for taking $3 million in bribes. He later went to prison. It was obvious he was taking the hit for his dad. A few hours after the indictment, Sharon had his first stroke. The second one, the one that killed him, followed soon thereafter. Sharon's supporters say he was a man of peace, that he was prepared to give up almost all of the West Bank for a settlement. No one who watched his career thinks this is realistic. He had never offered more than 44% of the West Bank for a Palestinian state, and this did not include the vast expanses of Greater East Jerusalem and his determination to hold on to the Jordan Valley. To the Israeli right, Sharon was a hero. As Weizmann said, "If I were in battle, I would want Sharon on my side." But we Americans also have a dog in this fight. We need a stable Israel and a stable Palestine, perhaps snarling at each other across a barricade, but not at war. As an American, I think Sharon's policies, seizing political land for Jewish settlers, assaulting Islam, doing everything he could to prevent a settlement, has destabilized the region and set the stage for horrendous future violence. Given our strong support for Israel, military, financial, political, we will certainly be entangled in that violence, whether we want it or not. Sharon liked to portray himself as a warrior for peace. I see him as a leader unto darkness and death. Thank you.